from the summit of Mauna Kea on the island of Hawaii. Welcome to the GCN Show.
Welcome to the GCN Show.
Coming up this week, Lachlan Morton has embarked on his latest ultra endurance epic, but we think it's training for something bigger. A round-the-world record attempt, perhaps?
So we catch up with current record holder Mark Beaumont to find out what he thinks about Lachlan's current exploits, his potential route, and, ultimately, whether he thinks he's got a chance of clinching that record.
Yeah. Also, you can find out how Dan managed to mortally offend poor Mark Beaumont. We also compare Peter Sagan to Ollie Bridgewood, hear why Dan thinks cyclists would ruin parkrun, and wonder if Instagram really knows what the world's most beautiful bike rides are.
This week in the world of cycling, we learned that a lot of you are very, very angry about the price of bikes and equipment. Still.
Yeah. Well, it's no wonder that people are still angry, because nothing has got cheaper since the last time. Lots of great comments under last week's show, and we will dive into some really good takes a little bit later.
Meanwhile, we also learned this week that Peter Sagan is back on a bike, isn't he? Albeit a water bike.
Yes. He was part of a team that rode from Calvi to Monaco for the Princess Marlene Foundation.
Great to see Sagan on our screens again, yeah, isn't it? But of course, the main reason we put this into the show is to give us an excuse to play the clip of Ollie trying to ride a water bike.
That is a classic, isn't it? It will never get old.
No.
We also learned that Primoz Roglic did finally manage to overhaul Australian rider Ben O'Connor in La Vuelta. O'Connor has long been knocking on the door of Grand Tour success, hasn't he? But a 1-in-1,000 breakaway success catapulted him into a 5-minute lead on just stage 6.
It took Roglic until stage 19 to overcome that lead, but overcome it he did, clinching his 4th Vuelta in the process.
Yeah, and finally this week we learned that the world's best ultra cyclists are really stepping it up right now, aren't they? Lael Wilcox is painfully close to claiming the women's round-the-world record. She's now just 500 miles away from Chicago, which is the city she set out from on the 26th of May.
She has averaged 171 miles a day, hasn't she? Which is 275 kilometres. Absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah, hats off to Lael. If all goes to plan, that will be a very well-deserved world record. Whereas the current holder, Jenny Graham, was entirely unsupported, Lael has had support, and her route has missed out Asia. So for purists, it's perhaps not in the spirit of the rules. The fact is, though, it's within the actual rules, and it is an awesome achievement.
What's also super interesting this week is Australian rider Lachlan Morton.
Yeah, the hipster's pro cyclist, the coolest man on two wheels, after Dan. He's already achieved, what you'd have to say, an unparalleled list of wins across both pro road racing, gravel racing, Unbound this year, and just general ultra endurance feats. But we're wondering if he's now gearing up for the round-the-world record.
He is hoping. I mean, we suggest this for a couple of reasons, don't we? Firstly, the owner of his EF education team, Jonathan Vorters, let slip that it was an aim of Morton's in late 2022, I think that was.
Yeah, and that's quite a clue, isn't it, that one? Clue number two is that he's just embarked on a mission to ride around the coast of Australia. Now, he is doing this to raise money for the Indigenous Literacy Foundation, which is a great cause, and fundraising is something that Lachlan has done a lot of before, hasn't he? And very effectively too.
So, why do we think that the Round Australia ride is clue number two? Well, it might not be, but riding around the coast of the UK was actually what Mark Beaumont did to fine-tune his strategy for his round-the-world record-breaking ride.
Yeah, which is precisely why we spoke to Mark to get his take and find out whether he's feeling nervous about his record. Mark, great to talk to you, as always. Should we cut to the chase, right? We think Lachlan Morton is going for your round-the-world record, okay? So it's early days so far in his Australia attempt, but 5 days in, right, he has racked up 485 kilometres, 405 kilometres, that was a crap day, 483, 483, 487 kilometres. What are your first thoughts on hearing this?
I mean, the fact that Lachlan has wanted to go for the round the world record has been the worst kept secret in endurance cycling in recent years. I think it got leaked a few years ago. It wasn't Lachlan himself who said he was up for it, but it's been pretty clear that that's been on his radar. So I wasn't surprised when he put out in the press a couple of weeks ago that he was going to go around Australia. Kind of makes sense. I went around Britain, he goes around Australia. As a bit of a training lap before the big 18,000 miles. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he finishes this loop and then goes straight on to the world. So how do I feel about it? I'm genuinely stoked. I want to see other athletes go for it. You know, back in 2005, I was inspired by Ellen MacArthur sailing around the world. I don't sail a boat, I ride a bicycle. And I thought, hey, I want to go for the biggest prize in the book. How fast can a human being get around planet Earth? And, you know, there's lots of other amazing races out there, but hey, it's the world. How fast can you get around the planet? So all kudos. I want to see people go for it. The world has changed quite a lot in the last 20 years. And yeah, there's no part of me that's trying to hold on to it. I want to see people going out there, smashing it and trying to get around the planet.
What's talked to you about his strategy? He seems to be replicating yours somewhat. You did 16 hours on the bike per day over the course of 17 hours in 4-hour blocks. He's kind of following that, but not quite as rigidly, perhaps, as you did. With the benefit of hindsight, we're now 7 years past your successful record attempt. Do you still see that as the best strategy for a round-the-world attempt?
I mean, that's 1,100 hours of basically time trialing. So 11, you know, you're out of your bed at 3:30 in the morning, on the bike at 4, you know, riding 4 times 4-hour sets. It's a beautiful routine. Anyone can ride 60 miles, just do it 4 times a day, 240 miles. Si Richardson is smiling back at me because he's lived this. And
I just remember you leaving me behind, Mark. I mean, I don't blame you, but so rigid was your strategy that when you're spoken, just to let you know, Mark's left. That you need, what? Oh, I had to catch you up.
It was the fact that for the first 6 hours up to the Belgian border, Si was slightly patronizing me, saying, this is all right, it's quite gentle. I could do this. I could be an endurance bike rider. And then for the next like 9.5 hours, he like half wheeled me and said, oh, this is quite hard, isn't it? And then at 240 miles, he said, that's the hardest day I've ever done on a bike. And I said, what are you doing, mate? You've got 35 minutes to go. We're riding 16 hours, not 15 hours and 25 minutes. So my point is, in answer to your very serious question, Dan, it's not about day one. It's about, can you wake up the next day and do it again, 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 again? Any good bike rider can ride a 250-mile day. Can you do it week two, month two? And I think the amazing thing that we all know about endurance is you don't need to go looking for it. It'll find you at some point down the road. And it's just such a sheer battle of attrition. And I don't just mean in terms of like the physiology, the psychology of it. It's brutal, like the sleep deprivation. And also just your immune system. You get battered, you know, and you're having to shovel down whatever, 9,000-10,000 calories a day. So it's the hardest thing I've ever done on a bike. It's such a long race. I think you've got to somehow compartmentalize each day. You can't just wake up at 3:30 in the morning and say, hey, I'm going to ride till 11 o'clock tonight. You've got to do what I do, which is like just ride through dawn, get to breakfast. Okay, back on the bike, little power nap, you know, ride till lunchtime. Otherwise, you would just go nuts. It's such a big ride.
It's interesting, you know, because Lachlan's persona is very much laissez-faire. He's very cool, unflappable. So actually, it'd be interesting to know, wouldn't it, behind that image, whether he is as regimented as you or whether or not that is going to work for him. And certainly we've never seen him do anything for quite as long as 78 days. The situation, as you mentioned earlier on, globally is very different now to when you did it, even in 2017. So his route will undoubtedly have to be different to yours. Do you think that he can still find a fast one?
The answer to can he find a fast route, if not a fast route, is definitely yes, because this is not a comment about the route that he will almost have to take. This is not a criticism to the athlete. And you could say the same for Lael as she sets out to break Jenny's record right now on the female side. You cannot ride the same routes that I rode. So the first time I went around the world, I went through Iran, Pakistan, India, skirting the, you know, the Afghan border, the Helmand province. second time around the world, I went through, you know, Turkey, Iran, Pakistan. So, and actually first time I went through Ukraine. So many of these countries you cannot ride through now for obvious reasons. And if you think about riding around the world in its simplest sense, you want to be able to look at a sort of a wall map and it look like a circumnavigation. So you've got to hit two points on the opposite side of the world. You're not allowed to go back on yourself. You've got to start finishing the same point. You've got to do more than 29,000 kilometers, 18,000 miles. So there's actually very simple rules, and you can figure out whatever route you want, as long as, you know, you want to go flats, you want to go good terrain, you know, easy border crossings, good flight logistics between continents. Both times I've been around the world, they're pretty faithful to that idea of what looks like an unbroken route around the world, albeit you can't cycle across the oceans. So the first time I went from Paris all the way to Calcutta in India, and the second time I went from Paris to Beijing. You cannot do that now. So the answer to your question, Si, can they find a faster route? Almost definitely, because if you don't go through the Middle East and Asia somehow, if you don't go through the Asian continent, which has the roughest roads, has the hardest border crossings, is the most culturally difficult if you are from the UK or Australia or Alaska, like Leila is, that is going to be the hardest bit of the world to get through. So what you end up having to do is going to what we talk about as the Western world, say North America and Europe, and doing sort of north-south loops, as long as you don't go back on yourself. So you need to add up those miles that you're not going to be able to do through Asia or the Middle East. So I'd say that's not a criticism of the athletes in this sort of era who simply can't go through there. I just wish it wasn't that way, because you can't get through there. It's unsafe to go through there. So therefore, but of course you're faster riding miles through the US and Canada than you are through Russia. Of course you are. I mean, it's just, you can't compare the two. The only thing I would say, and it's why I still want to promote people going for the round the world record. When I went for the round the world record the second time, the guy who had it before was an Olympian, a New Zealander called Andrew Nicholson. No disrespect to Andrew. I was never trying to break his record. I was trying to be the first person to get around the planet in less than 80 days. And it's not being unkind to Andrew to say that the only person you're really racing when you're going around the world is yourself. You're trying to figure out what your personal best is. So if somebody happened to go, you know, 75 days or 70 days, I'd be the first to congratulate them, because for me, it's almost impossible to do an exact like for like. And as I say, it's not like you're racing a person on your shoulder like you would in the Tour de France. You're just out there on this unbelievable 2.5 month time trial.
Yeah.
I want to go back just quickly to Lachlan, who's obviously got a very different background in cycling to yours. Now, he's ridden at the very highest level on the road. He's started to win some really big ultra endurance sort of short races over in the US and other places. But do you think there's any pitfalls that he might come across, given how gifted he is an athlete, over the course of 75, 78 days, or whatever it might take him if he does do a round-the-world record attempt? What would he come up against that he might not expect with his background versus what you'd done with your previous experience of going around the world?
I was laughing because I thought you were going to comment on how ungifted I am as a bike rider. I'm laughing, but I'm 6'3" and 100 kilos. So if you were to line me up with a bunch of pro riders, you wouldn't think that guy's got the round the world record, that guy's got the length of Africa record, that guy's broken the North Coast 500 record. As Si knows well, because we've done enough miles together, I'm a diesel engine. And my ability to win races and break records is, I think I can outsuffer most people. So it's not, I mean, yes, you need to outsuffer most when you're, say, a pro tour rider, but it's a different, it's a different thing. It's so attritional. It's so, and I'm not massively fast. I've got no sprint, and I've just got the ability to keep going. And I love the psychological side of it. So compare me to Lachlan. I keep saying Lachlan, but that's just because I'm Scottish. Lachlan. He is a more typical pro tour rider. You know, he's built more like you, Dan. He'll be a hell of a lot lighter than me. He'll be a lot more aerodynamic. He'll be a lot more explosive. I think his pitfall could be the same thing as his advantage. So whilst he's a phenomenally efficient rider and very, very fast, he's maybe more susceptible to getting ill. He's probably not got as much sort of, I think the biggest thing that's going to let you down there is actually your gut, your immunology. It's not just your physicality, but it's just the sheer the sheer length of the race and how incredibly hard it is on the body. And so actually being a bigger rider, I look more like a rugby player than a bike rider, probably gives me a toughness to that, which is, you know, he's maybe not got. I mean, he's absolutely tested himself, you know, doing the Tour de France unsupported and the Tour de Biden, some pretty amazing stuff. But 18,000 miles, it's a long race. And it's going to find you out if you can't stay healthy throughout that. So maybe being that much lighter, that much sort of more sort of a race snake than I am, might end up being a challenge. I don't know. The other part is just psychology. I think he does have enough life experience. I think he does have, you know, enough in the war chest to know how to battle hard. I always worry about riders who have just done really hard competitive racing and then try and go out and do the big ultra endurance stuff. I mean, Hank, poor Hank, you know, he's discovered it's a totally different world when you're racing, you know, a crit race of somebody on your shoulder and it's all over in 45 minutes and you completely waste yourself, as opposed to 2 o'clock in the morning when nobody's watching, you know, can you still race your bike hard and consistently? So yeah, I think he's got a good balance of physicality and experience, but we are totally different riders for sure.
Okay, lastly then, Mark, if he does go for around the world, how do you rate his chances for breaking your record?
How do I rate his chances? I think he has as good a chance as anyone who has gone for the records, you know, in the time that I've known it. So there's 20 years I've been obsessed with the round the world record. And he's certainly the best caliber rider that I've seen step up to the mark. But so much can go wrong. It's a 2.5 month race. So nobody is going to say this is a slam dunk. He's a good rider. I genuinely wish him well out there, but man, so much can go wrong. I mean, I wouldn't want to be in his shoes. I can't imagine. Like, having done it at that level, it's absolutely brutal. Don't tell him that, but I wouldn't do it again.
Yeah, well, I mean, you were in his shoes, weren't you? So yeah, they were a tight fit.
It wasn't the most fun bike race of my life. I'm glad I did it. It was my Everest. I left it all out there, but yeah. It's pretty one-dimensional. Ride your bike hard 16 hours a day for 2.5 months.
Brutal, mate. Brutal. Amazing. Right, thanks, Mark, so much for joining us today.
Well, I think that apart from sort of insinuating that Mark Beaumont has very little talent on the bike, that went well, didn't it? Really?
Yeah,
well.
It did. Yeah, really good. Yeah. I mean, he's a very, like, gracious man, isn't he? Like, I genuinely do think that he'd be delighted if, firstly, Lachlan sets out for the record. And genuinely, I think he'd be happy if he took it, wouldn't he?
I think so, yeah. I think he'd probably... I've got a sense that Mark wants somebody to go for it because he thinks that the person that does go for it will highlight the feat that he's already accomplished.
Yeah. You
know, whether they beat it or not. If Lachlan did go for it and did beat it, I'd imagine it wouldn't be by much. And I'd imagine he'd also be absolutely on his knees trying to achieve that, which would make Mark's record look as hard to achieve as it has been.
Yeah, I mean, Lachlan is riding faster, like 8K an hour average faster than Mark was.
Thank you.
Which is a lot, right? And he's covering a greater distance every day as a result. But then, as Mark said, you know, you've got to back that up day after day after day after day.
Exactly.
So anyway, it's going to be a wicked thing to watch out for, isn't it?
It will be, yeah. I think the biggest question probably on everyone's lips at home is whether you're going to join Lachlan for his first leg of the
No, not a chance. Anyway, let us know what you think in the comment section down below. Firstly, are we completely jumping the gun and missing what Lachlan is actually doing here? Or if we might be right, do you think he can do it? That's the big one.
I'm going to be interested to read these comments.
Yeah.
Anyway, now seems like an appropriate time to mention that there are a number of documentaries featuring Mark Beaumont that were on GCN Plus that you can now access if you take out one of the top two tier memberships for our YouTube channel here, GCN.
Yeah, that's right. So we've got Africa Solo, which he mentioned, didn't he? That's a two-parter. That's an absolute banger. And then the North Coast 500 record, which you also mentioned. Got that one on there. And then a whole load of crazy exploits with Hank, including that tandem end-to-end.
Yeah. I'd forgotten how much content Mark Beaumont did with us on GCN Plus.
Oh, yeah. Mark Smith.
They were always super popular, weren't they?
Absolutely.
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling shorts now, and we're going to start with a strangely coincidental item of news, which is that I went to my first ever park run at the weekend. I mean, junior park run.
Junior? Why is that? Because you're not good enough to do the adult one?
Well, pretty much.
I presume you took your kids, or one of them at least.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not that weird. Anyway, for anyone who doesn't know, a park run, or Park Run, I should say, is a phenomenally successful charity, I think, which organises free-to-enter 5-kilometre running events worldwide. I read, right, there are over 2,000 happening every week. Yeah, and over 6 million people signed up globally.
It's a fantastic initiative,
isn't it?
Getting people out the door, doing exercise, and then enticing them back week after week, most importantly.
Exactly, yeah. So after it, I was thinking, I wonder whether a similar thing would work in cycling, okay? There are a few events like that I know of. I joined one when I was filming for GCN Plus in Medellin in Colombia, where there's a 10-kilometre climb straight out of the city centre, and they close one lane to traffic every Sunday and give it over to cyclists. Yeah, it's incredibly well supported, but I sort of feel like that needs very specific conditions to be able to replicate it, i.e. a very big climb and a very wide road that you can then cone off a section.
Well, maybe it doesn't need to be a giant climb. The BBC actually ran a story about a Scottish former mountain bike champion who set up a park ride where riders can take on a 10K or 20K gravel loop. The masterstroke potentially being that parents can kind of drop their kids at a bike school while they go and ride and do those loops.
Sign me up. Yeah. That sounds fantastic.
My only worry with this, though, is that it's destined to be ruined by cyclists.
I think you might need to explain that.
Well, it's a race, isn't it?
Well, unofficially not.
No, not officially, but anyone with a grain of competitiveness in their bones knows that it's a race, either against themselves or against the other people doing it, which is fine when you're running.
Yeah.
The front of park runs is quite competitive. But on cycling rides, I think it poses a danger. Before too long, there'll be a big crash at a park ride because somebody's ridden a competitor into the barriers or trees, I guess it would be.
Yeah, I know what you mean, actually. And even for those genuinely not wanting to race or be competitive, it still wouldn't be long before someone falls off. But even so, like for non-competitive people, the idea is you get a time that you then try and beat each week, which I guess in theory means that people will just get faster and faster and faster.
Like I said, in theory, this sounds great. And don't get me wrong, I would love to see something along the lines of a park ride. I'm just, you know, I'm cynical as a person.
Yeah. Well, if there was a way of it working, then yeah, brilliant. And I really hope it does, because yeah, I too think it's absolutely flipping fantastic.
Well, yeah, I'd like to reiterate that as well. In so many ways, the park run is brilliant.
Indeed, yeah. And right now, plenty of you will have seen Connor's video last week where he took a first look at the Zwift Ride smart bike. It's now available as a standalone product without the trainer. So if you've already got a compatible trainer, jobs are good. But Zwift have also launched something called Zwift Ready, which will make it easier for people to buy Zwift-compatible smart trainers. Basically, they've got an official license agreement now, haven't they?
Yeah, all Zwift Ready trainers have a Zwift cog pre-installed, which means you use virtual Zwift gears as opposed to those on your bike. One advantage of which is that you can use multiple different bikes on the same trainer, irrespective of how many gears you have.
Yeah, or whoever's sharing your trainer with you, crucially. Zwift have also made a couple of software updates as well, by the way, which means you can now customise up to 7 of the data fields that you see on screen. Plus, they launched a new challenge, specifically with time-constrained people in mind.
Yeah, did you see what they called it?
No.
The Cardio Crusher.
Crikey.
Not quite sure if I like the sound of that or not. It sounds hard, doesn't it? Anyway, it's 6 workouts that are all under an hour in duration. And if you complete them all, you'll be rewarded with 250 XP and probably 2 very sore legs, judging by that name.
Yeah, hopefully it's Cardio Crusher, not Cardiac Crusher.
Yes.
Because there's a big distinction.
I didn't say
isn't
cardiac,
it?
Did I?
No, you didn't.
Good.
No.
Anyway, an update now on a climb that we've been talking about for the second week in a row, having not mentioned it for years. Box Hill in Surrey.
Yeah, the segment, which had been held for a couple of years, was broken twice in 2 days. But since last week's show, it has been broken again.
Crikey. This time by Dom Jackson of 4&CT, who went for 1 kilometre per hour faster and broke the record by 8 seconds. So his average speed on the climb was 33.7 kilometres per hour for a power of 518 watts. Although he did have a little bit of help.
Ooh.
Not only did he have teammates helping him to pace the climb, but he also swept the corners of gravel in advance of the attempt and had spotters on the blind corners so that he could take the shortest line if it was clear.
Oh, my word. Mm. Do we think that's acceptable? It's quite a lot of planning for a Strava.
It's quite a lot. I mean, to be fair, when I had that record, I'm not sure we mentioned that last week.
Yeah, it did.
I was
in
a full peloton on closed roads. So,
yes. I bet you didn't sweep the corners before, though, did you?
That is a very good point. I reckon I probably could have gone around a minute quicker without gravel on those corners.
Gravel hadn't been invented, mate, when you had that KOM.
No.
Right, now, we've spoken in recent weeks about the risk posed by illegal e-bikes or turbocharged e-bikes. And as if they were listening, in the news this week was that California are about to introduce a new bill that redefines what is and isn't an e-bike.
Well, hopefully it's slightly clearer than what was contained in the Bicycle Retailer article we read. As after that, I am none the wiser as to what the current legislation is, what's changing, and indeed, what it might mean. However, given that the USA has some of the most powerful e-bikes out there, many of which are throttle-activated, you'd think there's some fairly easy scope for improvement.
Yes, here is hope.
Mm. Moving on now to something that we saw on Momentum magazine over in Canada, which has ranked the top 30 most beautiful places in the world to ride a bike.
Yes, and rather than just being through subjective opinions of the writers, they had a kind of algorithm, didn't they? In effect, they took the length of each route and correlated it with the number of pictures posted to Instagram with related hashtags, which then gave them a frequency of uploads per kilometre of riding.
Sounds very scientific,
doesn't it? Just?
Topping the list with 832 Instagram images shared per kilometre is the 755-kilometre Blue Ridge Parkway in Virginia. The USA also came second, actually, with the Going to the Sun Road, which is in Montana.
Yeah, the conclusion being that there are more people in the USA using Instagram with the correct hashtags than anywhere else in the world.
Oh, how very cynical of you, sir.
Well, I know, yeah. The photos do make both of them look beautiful, to be fair. The highest ranked in the UK was the South Downs Way in fifth, and then the Camel Trail in Cornwall in 13th. Both very lovely, but neither, I would say, deserve to be in the top 30 most beautiful bike rides in the world.
No, it just happens to have a lot of people Instagramming the correct hashtags.
Exactly. Also, do you think they can work out which people have ridden the Blue Ridge Parkway in Virginia versus which people have driven?
Oh, that's a good point.
Because I suspect a lot of people drive that 755-kilometre route and Instagram it.
I presume they have taken that into account. Do you think we could skew this survey next year and do some really rubbish bike route around Bristol, but just put loads of photos with the correct hashtag so it makes the top 30?
I think we should, yeah. Mm. I mean, really, they didn't even think to look for rubbish bike routes around Bristol, but yeah.
I can't believe that bike path, I think it was called the Valtellina bike path, that Ollie rode in Italy recently, didn't make the list.
True.
Just wondered whether maybe it's because it's not been opened all that long.
Yeah, well, there's not much phone signal whilst you're there. Here is a nice good news story, anyway, to finish Cycling Shorts. We'd like to offer our congratulations to Stanley Woods and Bonnie Webb, who got married on the start line of the Waco Wild West bike race last week.
That's a brilliant story to end,
isn't it?
Yeah, congratulations both.
They met on a group ride.
Nice.
How good is that? Group bike ride, I should say.
It's the last time you and I are allowed out for a group ride. Hack /bodge of the week. Get involved every week by going to upload.globalcyclingnetwork.com with your hacks and bodges. First one this week comes in from San Findlater, who said, tired of bench shifters when flying with soft shell bike bags. I've used an old handlebar along with part of a metal broom handle to create a protective cage for the shifters, all held in place with zip ties and electrical tape.
I'm happy with that, mate.
So am I.
I think that is brilliant. I've been very fortunate in all my years of travelling with a bike that I've only broken two things. Mm. Both of them were handlebars.
Oh, really?
Yeah. One of them was on our boss's bike.
I remember that one.
That was unfortunate. But yeah, anyway, this looks like an absolutely brilliant solution. So, yeah, fair play, Sam. That's a massive hack from me.
It's a hack from me as well.
There you go. Right, next up, this one we've got from Guapo Joe. Gelato Container Upcycle. I used containers from Gelato for organisation of small parts like headset spaces, valves, etc. On an overhanging shelving unit, affix the lid of the container to the roof of the cabinet with a screw to save some space. Have parts at eye level. Now, you like the look of this, don't you?
I love the look of this, yes.
I like the look of this, but I worry that I would at some point not screw the jar on properly.
The lid.
And then I'd knock it, and then obviously gravity would do its work, yeah. And those beautifully contained spare parts would go all over my flipping garage.
Mm. Well, you'd want to make sure, wouldn't you? You'd only make that mistake once, I reckon.
You see, I have a feeling with me, I would probably do it multiple times. So, yeah.
No, I think it looks very neat. I would say that I don't think that there is an ice cream container that you can purchase in the UK that is as posh as these things that we're looking at here.
No, that must be some seriously
We looked it up
just
before we started
gelato.
Filming this section, didn't we?
Yeah.
We had one for sale on eBay in the US for $3.50.
Yeah, it's true. But I'm sure you could find similar pots. They look like the pots that you give samples, urine samples in, don't they?
I'm sure they're a bit bigger than that.
You think?
Yeah, maybe if you can find pots that take urine samples of elephants, maybe you might stumble upon something like this.
Okay, I'm going to say hack anyway.
I'm saying hack as well.
Even if I'm not the target audience for this.
Dan Moore wrote in, says he's rigged up this from an old Canicross belt to support his upper body post-broken collarbone surgery, hoping not to lose too much fitness. Basically like a harness that's sort of lassoed over the top of a plank at the top of his shed, presumably just to take the weight off his upper body and therefore not taking the weight on his arms and broken collarbone.
Yeah, fair play. I think that's super cool, actually. If it works, then I've got to say hack. And I really like the look of your bike as well. Something really nice about that.
I'll say hack as well, then.
Yeah, all right. God, this is good, isn't it? A lot of pressure on the last
one.
We're
both in a very positive mindset today, aren't we?
We are indeed, yeah. Matchyek has submitted this. While travelling on a train with my bike, I'm always worried about my precious machine. There is a special place for a bike to be attached by the wheel. That thing is metal without any rubber on it. To prevent scratches to my rim, I need to be creative. I usually have Haribo in my pocket, so I use that for protection. And there is said bike in wheel rack with a packet of Haribo just tucked in. Does that work?
I'd imagine it would stop scratches, yes.
If there's enough Haribo in there.
Even without, surely just the plastic. Do you think the plastic would scratch the rim?
I just feel like the metal would sort of like go through it. I figured if there's enough like squishy Haribos in there, that might work.
Possibly. I think there's probably a better solution to this if you're that worried. I can see that you would be worried because your bike is absolutely immaculate.
Yeah. If anyone else watching this travels on First Great Western, our bike racks are probably about as crap as that.
Are they?
If not worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you do to protect your rims?
Just keep my fingers crossed, generally. I mean, first world problem, right? But sometimes if I'm traveling with a bike with wheels that are too aerodynamic, they just won't even fit in the rack.
Yeah.
They don't allow you to put anything deeper than a 50mm in there. Okay. Sometimes.
I mean, what does Ollie do with his time trial bikes when he goes on the train?
That's a good point.
During the time trial.
Yeah. Okay. I think I might say bodge. I just feel like there might be a better hack.
End it on
that.
A somber note.
Well, I mean,
I see what you mean, though. Yeah, it doesn't. It's not much of a hack, is it?
Not really, no.
No. Get a handkerchief.
There you go.
Or a necker scarf.
There you go. Right, more hacks and bodges next week. It's time now for Caption Competition, the part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a very coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All right, nearly grabbed one of these. That's the VSS bottle. You don't get to win one of those. Those are like next level.
I used one of those when I was playing golf the other day. Did keep my water.
Who are you? What?
Yeah.
Anyway, no, we've got the trusty champagne filled one.
Oh, gosh.
Ooh, God.
A few more weeks, we'll be drunk upon one.
I was going to say, Christmas party time. Right, this was the photo we gave you last week, Dan.
Yeah, Ben O'Connor in the red jersey at La Vuelta, riding into the mist up a mountain. We've got a sort of poem almost. What do you call these things? There's a name for them, isn't there? Anyway, it was sent in by Easton Brown. There is no pog in this here fog, but he's not too sorely missed. For the waiting crowd envelops in cloud, a red Van Rysel tops the GC list. O'Connor's caper, that man in the vapour, put minutes into the rest, and now they are few to give Ben his due, still eyeing his coveted vest. There's much elevation, perhaps more condensation before they get to the final TT. So shrouded in haze, these last few grade days will decide our Grand Tour number three.
Wowzers. Grade A for effort, Easton Brown. I know that it is actually a certain type of perm, isn't it? It's on the top of my tongue.
Tip of my tongue.
Thank you.
You've got no chance of remembering what that's called. You're saying top of your tongue. It's on the top of my tongue.
Anyway, that's really going to annoy me.
You can look it up afterwards. We should probably crack on with letting Easton Brown know that they need to write in on Facebook with their address to get a Camelback Water sent out to them. This week's photo also is from La Vuelta, but the final day podium presentation. Ben O'Connor on the left, Primoz Roglic with two of his kids, or his two kids, should I say, in the middle, and Enric Mas with his child on the right-hand side. I'll get started. Ben O'Connor realising he had no place in going to the junior park run.
I don't like people turning podiums into crèches, if I'm honest. No.
Ben doesn't look too happy about it.
No, he doesn't, does he? He's like, oh, you just ruined the podium ceremony. I've just come second in Grand Tour and like feel like I'm babysitting. Mm. I mean, he's obviously not. Cause
he's forever going to have a picture of other people's kids on his wall.
I know. I'm not into that at all. Anyway, see if you can do better than Dan.
Yep.
That is quite a good
one.
Or
better than Easton Brown. Not to say that you're definitely going to win if you send in a poem slash whatever's on the top of Si's tongue, but anyway, give it your best shot.
It's there. It is literally there. Just give me a minute, all right? Oh, my God. What is it?
There once was a man called Richardson who had a word on the tip of his tongue. It was called limerick.
It was, yeah. It was a poor limerick, that one. That was terrible. comment of the week now. There's loads and loads of great comments in the last few shows. As you said, very much on a theme, which was that everything's too expensive in cycling, hence the issue with the bike industry right now. But this one really jumped out at me, Dan. So this is sent in by Zhu Chen Glynn. It's time to distinguish bike brands versus bike factories. The brands are suffering for sure because they're too greedy, but the factories actually making the bikes in China, Taiwan, Vietnam are all fine. They operate with two very different business models. Factory makes a low margin, low risk living. No money, no production, no stock, no buffering, no risk of any kind. However, the brands live a high risk, high margin life. When the bikes sell like running water, the brand makes huge money by charging up the price, but the factory's paid the same. However, when that stops, it's the brands who need to deal with the stocks. The money to the factory is paid up front. No money, no production. It's an interesting take there, isn't it? I'm not entirely sure I agree 100%, because presumably, like, there's still competition among bike factories. Mm-hmm. And if demand drops, then presumably there are factories that suffer.
I'd imagine there's a lag, though, isn't there? Because as we all know, there was an over-ordering of products and bikes, etc., during or post-lockdown.
Yeah. In
anticipation that the graph would continue to go in an upward trajectory. So maybe the knock-on effect of factory will be further down the line.
Yeah.
Has just come now.
I'd be interested to know whether it is like payment up front as well if you want to get bikes made. Anyway, yeah, loved that comment. And if you've got any insight as well, then get involved in the comment section.
Yeah, there's no food for thought.
Yeah.
Gixxer750 Pilot wrote, it's interesting you said the expensive bikes are selling well, which suggests people who are already cycling want to upgrade. But there are no new cyclists coming through. The cycling industry need to plan for the long game and the customers of tomorrow with cheaper entry-level bikes.
It's really resonated with us as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because actually, that is a very, very good point, is that it's not about those of us that are already cycling. Mm. But if you want to get into cycling, if you think the price tag is going to be $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, which you could be forgiven for thinking...
Yeah, it's a significant barrier to entry, isn't it?
Well, yeah, massive, yeah. So thank you very much for that one. A few people picked up on our schoolboy antics about rectal thermometers. Scott Bolton said, cycling with a rectal thermometer, I sense a new challenge for Hank. And this one from Tim C, what's the difference between oral and rectal thermometers? The flavour.
Very good. Nice one, Tim. That's something I won't be able to get out of my mind. Next up, is this the ultimate upgrade for Zwift, which we mentioned earlier? Robert Burns wrote in and said, I recently just purchased and it's absolutely brilliant. Complete game changer for me. My wife and kids have also dabbled. I've never had an indoor setup before, so it covered all bases for me.
That's cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, cheers there, Robert. I'm barely holding it together. I mean, that's like the eighth time I've read that joke. Is this the new king of Strava? This was a video from Saturday. Koval17CHUK said, the drive behind the camera motorcycle probably also helped quite a bit. Feather has already taken back one of these and tied Matthew on the third one from Lawrence1347. There's quite a lot of controversy under that video.
I know.
About that. About,
we didn't sweep the corners, though, did we?
We didn't sweep the corners. A lead out from Hank is probably not worth terribly much these days, yeah. Is it, really?
Yeah, I mean, a lot's come back from after that lead out.
Yeah, exactly.
What we learned, right? This chap looks like the love child of Tadej Pogacar and John Cannings.
Oh, goodness me.
Interesting what that person... No wonder they got a pseudonym rather than their real name.
Absolutely,
that's the sort of thing that goes through their mind that they're willing to put as a comment.
Wowzers.
Whilst Kiowa 21 put, poor guy is more frightened by what handshake Hank will throw at him next than any of those climbs.
Yeah. Lucky he didn't get the Hank hug, isn't it, really? Anyway, yeah, Matt Holmes, what an absolute legend.
Lovely chap as well, isn't he?
Super nice guy, yeah, proper good. And then finally, Connor and Hank's latest adventure, they rode the worst tandem very, very long way, didn't they?
Further than we expected.
Yeah, Wandering Pete said, if you saw them on the street, you might think it was a dad taking his son for a ride on a homemade tandem.
Mark Davey wrote, this is the craziest challenge yet. It looked like a real effort. Such a lot of fun to watch Hank and Connor. I almost gave myself a hernia laughing so much.
I'd say that's cool, but you don't want to give yourself a hernia. I'm laughing. And then the one true Dave said, pure slapstick from beginning to end, but I still think the funniest bit was 15:24 with Hank claiming to be 6 minutes.
Yeah, he's only 6'1", isn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Right, what's coming up on the channel this week? On Wednesday, we are going to show you how to climb better by improving your VO2 max. I promised myself I was going to do VO2 max intervals after doing an entire episode saying how important VO2 max is for longevity. I've done one session. They are hard, aren't they?
I mean, they are hard, yeah. What have you got, 2 months before we got to see how much you have turned yourself around?
I'm just going to take all the supplements that Connor said are proven to work, and I'll do some heat training, and jobs are good. And
there you go, mate, yeah.
Live to 110 then.
See if you can cheat longevity. Yeah. Thursday, reasons why the road bike is still boss. I didn't write that one.
No, neither did I. We'll find out a lot more on Friday then. Thursday. On Friday, what I've learned from owning an e-bike. Is that yours?
Yes, it is, actually. I did write that one, yes. Yeah, I bought an e-bike nearly 3 years ago now. So I know there's a lot of people that are sort of still umming and ahhing about whether to invest. Mm. So I thought I'd tell you what it's like owning an e-bike. On Saturday, I can't wait for this. It's the latest episode from Dan. Not about VO2 max at the time. It's about alcohol.
It's about alcohol, yes. Many of you will know that I do quite like a beer. Have done for a number of years now. So I'm looking through the effects of alcohol on the brain and body, trying to find if there's any studies that suggest that there might be some sort of benefit to you. Did find one, spoiler alert, but you'll have to watch the episode on Saturday to find out.
I love that. I was scouring the internet and scientific journals for weeks to find something that allowed me to still have a bit.
I'd imagine it's probably been debunked since that was released as well.
Possibly, but, yeah.
Let me know your thoughts when you watch the video.
Yeah, and then on Sunday, you asked for it, we've delivered. A few weeks back, we bought a bicycle for £82.50 with free delivery. It was both good and also awful at the same time. So you asked to see what it would take to make it good. So we've done precisely that.
Yeah, just put a load of like free Dura stuff on from Alex's garage, didn't we? Right. Thanks very much for watching. Don't forget to get involved in the comments with your opinion on whether Lachlan Morton could beat Mark Beaumont's round the world record.